Good evening. This is Howard Smith. 2 weeks ago on Face the Nation debates, Walter Reuther, as a spokesman for organized labor, and Dr. Edward R. Annis, a representative of the American Medical Association, debated the controversial issue, health care, should it be financed through Social Security? The debate, originally scheduled for half an hour, produced so much heat and information that it was virtually impossible to terminate it. Instead, we suggested that Dr. Annis and Mr. Reuther stay at their positions and we would continue the debate. Here is a brief reprise of that first encounter and then the continuation, which lasted for 47 minutes and which will be presented exactly as it happened.
And what bothers me, instead of being against all these things, instead of calling everything socialism, why don't you sit down with other people and see if we can't together find a practical mechanism?
Mr. Reuther.
Now, the Kerr bill will not do the job because only 9 states have come under the Kerr bill. In the state of Kentucky, for example, and the Wall Street Journal the other day had the report on this, in the state of Kentucky, they only provide under the Kerr bill, as worked out there, 3 days of hospitalization. Now, what happens at the end of that? Well, the person is either thrown on the indignities of public charity or they're pushed off to some poor farm. This is 1961. I think that's not a rational, sensible way to meet this problem. And that's why we think the Kerr bill is not the answer.
Mr. Reuther, you know as well as I do that a great number of the states have not yet had their legislatures meet. In Florida, our legislature meets this month. Our plans are being drawn up. It at the present time, the Kerr Mills bill is being implemented, or is the work is being laid for implementation in 46 of our states. You know, sir, as well as I do, the plan presented today by President Kennedy will not begin to take effect for over a year. It takes time to set these things up. The Kerr-Mill bill was passed just a few months ago. The implementation is now being pushed in a great number of our states, and this bill is designed to help people who are in need, sir.
Excuse me for interrupting now. I'm afraid that's the end of the time we have for this particular program, but I'm going to make an invitation to both of you, and that is that you stay after we've closed this program and we resume this debate, and we will tape it and present it to the public in 2 weeks' time. Will you agree to that, Mr. Reuther?
I'd be happy to.
I would be very happy to. We've just gotten started.
I think so, too. As John Paul Jones said, you've just begun to fight. We now continue with our debate on health care, should it be financed through Social Security. And now to make an opening statement, Mr. Walter Reuther.
Well, as I stated, this problem has very serious proportions. There are millions of Americans in the age group who cannot afford the high cost of medical care, hospital care, or the high cost of drugs. There are 16 million Americans age 65 or more, and the number will increase drastically in the next few years. 3 out of 5 have $1,000 or less as yearly income. And at the time that their income is contracting because they are no longer gainfully employed, their medical needs increase by 2.5%. And the question is, what can we do to help our older citizens meet this basic human need? We believe that the sensible and sane and practical thing to do is to extend the principle of Social Security so that people can pay for the high cost of medical care in their senior years during the productive years of their life, and so that they can get this medical care as part of their Social Security benefits without subjecting themselves to the indignities of public charity.
Dr. Annis?
I agreed with Mr. Reuther before in our concern for the elderly people and for bringing medical care to all of our Americans. Pointed out that the reason we have 16 million Americans in this country is because of good medical care, which has been made available to the 16 million, not only those who are over 65 years of age, but we've tried to make it available to our entire population. One of the aims and objectives of the Medical Association, the doctors making up the American Medical Association, is to see that this high quality of medicine is made available. Mr. Reuther again has brought up that old figure that's been used so often where you can misuse statistics, stating that 3 out of 5 people have less than $1,000 a year income. You know, it's also easy to say that of all the people 14 years of age and over in this country, half of them make less than $1,000 a year. Or we could go into my family. My wife and I have 8 children. I can tell you that 90% of the people in my family make less than $500 a year. This is an example of a misused statistic. The important thing is this. As physicians, we too recognize and realize that there are people and there are elderly people in this country who are in need. Former Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare Fleming indicated that there are approximately 4 to 5 million people who are in need of medical care, but of this number, approximately 4 million would not be covered by the Social Security approach. The doctors of this country for whom I speak feel that these people who need medical care and cannot afford it are the ones where we should direct our aid. This is the responsibility of government, to have people, to help people who can not help themselves. In the earlier debate, Mr. Reuther quoted Abraham Lincoln. I might also remind you, sir, that Lincoln said that the responsibility of government is to do only those things for the people that they are unable to do for themselves. We feel that these people who are elderly and who are in need of help can be greatly aided by the Kerr-Mills bill. In the closing statement of the last debate, Mr. Reuther, you admitted that there are 4 or 5 million people who would not be covered under the Social Security approach. You also indicated that you would be willing to sit down with us as representatives of the medical society and come up with some sort of a bill to take care of these people not covered by Social Security. We already have a bill passed by the last session of the Congress, the Kerr-Mills bill, resulting from many weeks of deliberation in the House and the Senate, designed to help everyone who is in need of help, whether they receive Social Security or not. This is the bill that we are for. We are opposed to the basic principle of Social Security for any age group of our population, irrespective of need, because this is the first step toward socialism.
Well, I would like to re-begin the debate by asking you, Mr. Reuther, what is your answer to the objection of many doctors that the present plan will cover people 65 years and over, but in a few years the level will be lowered to people 60 and over, then down to 50 and over, and eventually we'll have a socialized medicine scheme?
Well, I think that the concern of the medical society about that problem is without foundation. I don't think we're going to have Social Security down to 50. In the very near future. I mean, I just think that this is completely unfounded as a fear, and that this is part of this whole propaganda campaign, really, to try to confuse the issue. Now, the Medical Society is pushing the Kerr-Mills bill, and I'd like to just give you the opinion of a person who is going to be charged with the administration of the Kerr-Mills bill in the state of Connecticut. Now, he says that this is an administrative monstrosity, and the gentleman I'm going to quote is a Mr. J.W. Tramberg, who is now the Commissioner of Welfare for the state of New Jersey. He was a high official in the Eisenhower Republican administration, and this is what he has to say about the Kerr-Mills bill as a practical instrument to meet this serious problem of medical care. And I quote now from the January 30th issue of Medical Economics. Quote, the AMA's white hope for avoiding Social Security paid care for the aged, the Kerr-Mills program, looks like a white elephant to New Jersey Welfare Commissioner J.W. Tramberg. He says it is so tough to administer that he would need a bureaucracy to keep the program clean. It is potentially the biggest scandal ever to hit America, he adds. I have no desire to be hung because of this foolish program. Now, this is not a partisan Democrat. This is not a labor leader. This is a high official of the Eisenhower administration who knows this field and who says that the Kerr-Mills bill was created not to meet this basic problem. It was an end run. It was to have something to block the Social Security program. And if you'll go back far enough, you'll find that,
Mr. Reuther,
you people opposed it in the early days.
Mr. Reuther, this is another example of some of the verbiage that you have been throwing out to the American people, trying to throw this clouded issue of a medical monstrosity. May I say, sir, that if the gentleman...
This is not my quote.
May I say, sir, that if the gentleman from Connecticut were to come to Florida, we will show him how to implement the program, as it can be shown in a great number of the other states. I'll say also that when Senator Byrd of Virginia presented this before the Senate, he said this is a good bill. This is the result of many weeks of deliberation on the part of conscientious men in the House Ways and Means Committee and in the Senate Finance Committee. This is a bill that will take care of people who are in need. This is a bill that can be properly implemented. And I will say to you, sir, that it is true that the Governor Rockefeller of New York stated that the bill wasn't any good and he wouldn't do anything about it. But when I was in New York less than 3 weeks ago, there was an article in the paper that he asked the New York legislature for $40 million to implement this program. And at the same time, there was a report in the newspapers that a survey of people who had been made in the various institutions of medicine, medical hospitals, and nursing homes in the state of New York indicated that 40% of these people had no reason for being in a medical institution if they had a home where someone had something to care for them, would take good care of them. I merely say, sir, this is an opinion of one individual, whereas the opinion of Senator Byrd of Virginia, highly respected and a man who's talked after many weeks of debate in the House and Senate, is also one to be considered. But I'd like to go back to your original statement that we have an unfounded fear that this Social Security is not going to be reduced to those that are 40 and 50 and others. Isn't it true, sir, that repeatedly you have pushed for a general compulsory medical aid bill to cover all of the men and women and children in this country?
We have not, sir. I've had more to do, and the organization with which I'm associated in Michigan has got more to do with the voluntary, non-governmental medical programs in Michigan than all the doctors. We worked hard because we believe in trying to deal with a broader section of the medical care needs of America through voluntary group non-governmental plans. But we're talking about the aged. If you place the cost of medical care of the aged upon the Blue Cross structure in Michigan, in Florida, or in any other state, you will bankrupt the system. I happen to believe that separating the cost of medical care for the aged, which is very high cost, from the voluntary non-governmental plans, you will be strengthening the non-governmental plans because you will relieve them of an economic burden that they can't carry.
But, Mr. Ruther, in your testimony before the House Ways and Means Committee, you admitted to the gentleman from Texas that you have been in the past with Wagner-Murray-Dingell legislation and other types of compulsory national health insurance to take care of all of
the
people in this country.
That's when you fellows were fighting Blue Cross. But when we got Blue Cross established, that's where we've been working. I'm right now the president of a new voluntary non-governmental medical group in the city of Detroit called the Community Health Association, where we're working with a broad community leadership trying to develop a more comprehensive medical care. Now, if I were opposed to voluntary non-governmental group care, why would I be the president of a new one? Why would my organization be financing it? Why would we be working with other groups? The thing you've got to remember is in the early days when the medical society was opposed to Blue Cross, when you said Blue Cross was socialism, when we couldn't get a single doctor to participate, we then said if that door is blocked, if we can't travel the group voluntary non-governmental approach represented by Blue Cross, then we'll knock on the door in Washington. It was only after we broke down the medical association's resistance to Blue Cross, when they quit calling it socialism, that we then said, okay, this is where we'll make our major effort, and that's what we've been doing.
Mr. Ruther, the point I was bringing back is that repeatedly over a period of many years, you have been saying all of these things, you've been making partly true and half true accusations against the American Medical Association. But repeatedly,
well,
you have...
Is it true that the Medical Association in Genesee County resisted Blue Cross, called it socialism?
When you pick a small group and a small segment and say this particular group resisted socialism and therefore the whole approach is wrong, may I ask you, sir, that are the works of the leaders of American labor today, are they those that you will stand up and say that this leader and this union and that union has always been right? Would you say they are right today in the things that they're doing? And would you damn all of them for all of their efforts because of the shortcomings or the deficiencies of a few?
No, but
I will say to you, sir, that you are not...
The position of the Genesee Medical Society in Flint, Michigan, back in the early part of 1940, reflected the official position of the National Medical Association.
Sir,
and the records will show that that's true. That they were opposed to any voluntary group at that time.
Excuse me, you're talking about the past, and that is illuminating, but I would like to bring you back to the merits of the present argument. Now, could I ask you a question, Dr. Annis? What is your answer to the argument that the Kerr-Mills bill, which now prevails, would require elderly people who have saved all their lives to become paupers before they receive benefits? Would it not be better to avoid the tragedy and let them keep their savings rather than let them become paupers and then become beneficiaries?
Well, you see, of course, this is a misstatement of the Kerr-Mills bill. Last Tuesday in Jacksonville, Florida, with a meeting of our state welfare board and the rest, and I'm citing this as a specific example of a suggested implementation of the Kerr-Mills bill, a proposal was made by the representative of our state welfare board that in order for a person to qualify under the Kerr-Mills bill, they may own a home irrespective of its value, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000. They may have insurance with a cash surrender value, which is not to be considered. They may have liquid assets of up to $2,000. They can have an income of up to $2,000 a year and still qualify for the Kerr-Mills implementation. In other words, they do not have to sell their house. They do not have to put it up for a mortgage, which has to be repaid out of their relatively small income. They do not have to sell their insurance or put it up for a loan that has to be repaid out of their income, but they will qualify under the implementation of this bill because of their limited income and their limited liquid assets. This, we feel, is a reasonable, a reliable, and an understandable approach to the problem of the elderly. This is what will be proposed. This is basically what will be proposed by the Welfare Board of the State of Florida for implementation during the session of the Florida legislature that meets next week. This is not pauperizing anyone. This is making medical care available to those people who are in need. We have a program that's been operating in Florida for 6 years to take care of people of any age who are in need. Interestingly, under this program, which costs the state in excess of $5 million a year, the state and the county pay the hospital, the drug, and the nurse's bill. The physicians of Florida contribute their services for nothing to take care of people who are in need. The Kerr-Mills principle will merely expand this to take care of outpatient services, nursing home services, and anything else that these people are in need of. It will not pauperize. It should not pauperize. And we agreed that these people should not be pauperized to qualify for medical care.
Yes, but as a practical matter, that's precisely what's going to happen all over America. First of all, the Kerr-Mills bill will require action every year on the part of the federal government to appropriate money for the coming year. It will require action on the part of 50 state bodies where they will have to appropriate money. It will require all this complicated administrative machinery. Now, what bothers me, Dr. Annis, is you say you're opposed to the Social Security principle because it's compulsory. All taxation is compulsory. You say also that
I'm glad you call it taxation and not insurance, because it is taxation.
I don't care what you call it.
Oh, but I do.
Pay for insurance.
It is not insurance, sir. This is taxation.
Half of the cost of the Kerr-Mills bill will be borne by the states and the local communities. And the most regressive kind of taxation in America is the tax structure at the state and the local community, because it bears disproportionately heavy upon the small property owners.
Mr.
And
Ruther,
they will have to pay for half of this cost.
Mr.
Now,
Ruther,
I want to pose a question for you.
You are in error. I do not pay half of the cost. In the state of Florida, for example, the cost is only approximately 40%. In some states, like in Mississippi, approximately 75 to 80% will be given by the federal government, because the local community
Mississippi as the basis for our national standard.
Sir, I was merely
correcting
like the record.
Question
you stated that they would pay half, and that was an error.
Well, that's what the law says.
Then you better reread the law.
I happen to believe that the Social Security approach is the soundest, because essentially it's a national approach to a national problem. Now, what happens if, as our aged population increases tremendously in the next few years, as it will, as we all know it will, and you get mass movement of older citizens from the northern states to the states in the south where they have a more favorable climate?
Including Florida. We're very pleased with the climate.
Including Florida. What happens when hundreds of thousands of these people locate in a new community, and that community has to help raise the funds to carry the cost of medical care for them, the state of Florida? Won't that movement of the aged population begin to put a tremendous economic burden upon the state and the local communities, a burden that they are not responsible for, but the property owners in those communities and states will have to carry that under the Kerr-Mills approach?
Under the Social Security approach,
they could go down there and their Social Security benefits would follow them, because they would be spread over the Social Security structure.
Mr. Ruther,
how do you meet that kind of practical taxation problem?
I am so happy that you presented this as a problem, because all over Florida, which is one of the fastest growing states in the Union, we have elderly people moving from all of the other 49 states, and we're very happy to come down and have them live there with us. But may I remind you, sir, that the great majority of these people who come into Florida are people who bring good wealth and assets, and they buy their own homes, and they buy them in communities, and they're going into communities where they live together with their friends and relatives and others, with others of their own age. And these are bringing people from all over the country who are self-sufficient and able to take care of themselves. They will be no drain on the local community. They will be no drain on the people of Florida, and we're very happy to have them. Now, this is true, that to the extent that people come from the other 49 states to enjoy the sunshine of Florida, and they are faced with medical problems that they are unable to pay for, this, I agree with you, sir, is the responsibility of the states from where they come and from the federal government, and they should not be the responsibility of the citizens of Florida. This is where the Kerr-Mills principle does work. Because in Florida, approximately 40% would come from the state and local government, and the other 60% would come from the federal government. This will vary from state to state with population and the income of the population, because this is the implementation of the Kerr-Mills bill. Under this circumstance, when people do come into Florida who are elderly and they are in need of medical care, it will be provided. But the citizens of America, representing the other states from which they come, through the Kerr-Mills principle, will contribute. But those who are able to pay their own bills, they will not be the liability of the taxpayers in Florida, the liability of the taxpayers of any of the other 49 states. Like Americans who have built their own homes and bought their homes and raised their children and paid for their education, they have also planned for their own security in their own age, in a well old age, and are well able to take care of themselves. These, sir, we think are representative of the outstanding, finest people in this country. They make up the greatest portion of those who are over 65 years of age. Those who are less fortunate, we do feel, are the responsibility of government. We too feel that the federal government has a responsibility here. But we do not feel that that responsibility should reach to that stage where we must socialize a profession and socialize our care by providing care for a whole segment of our population merely by virtue of age, including those who are well able to take care of themselves.
Our basic disagreement, now I think you're going to find that inviting people past the age of 65 to come in large numbers to Florida, at the point you have to begin to meet the increasing cost of medical care, you'll think this one through. And a few years later, you'll be down the road on our side of this issue, just as you were on the Blue Cross and these other things. This is the wonderful thing about a free society. You're free to change your mind when you find out you're wrong. And you fellows were wrong.
Well, I'm
and
very
the thing
happy
that to... put you on the wrong side of this issue, and this is the basic, I think this is the nub of this discussion. The American Medical Society has not really accepted a tried and tested principle of social insurance.
Mr. Ruth, this is not insurance.
Just a moment. A free people, just as 25 years ago under Franklin Roosevelt, they said that Social Security was socialism, that Social Security would regiment America, that Social Security would require everybody to wear a dog tag with a number. They were wrong, because Social Security, I believe, although it's inadequate and we need to improve its structure and broaden its benefits and extend the coverage, the facts are that no law on the statute books of the United States has given so many Americans at the time in their life when they need help, given them more security and more dignity and more happiness and more basic freedom. Because human freedom is not something unrelated to basic economic problems. Freedom is not some value you enjoy in a vacuum. Freedom is only possible if you can take care of your basic human needs. And the Social Security structure, despite the fact that it was opposed by all kinds of people who called it socialism, has, I believe, given millions of Americans a sense of hope, a sense of purpose, a sense of worth and dignity in the autumn of their lives. And if we can apply medical care to that same principle, it will be another important step forward in developing a rational, responsible, and morally sound social program in terms of the needs of the American people.
Mr. Ruther, repeatedly you refer to the Social Security system as if you're referring to the Bible. This has been a consistent approach. You talk about it as insurance, which it is not. The United States Supreme Court has repeatedly held that this is a welfare program supported by taxation. In the first 13 years of its existence, it remained stationary at 1% of $3,000. In the last 10 years, there have been 8 increases. In the last 3 days or 5 days, President Kennedy has recommended 2 additional increases, which will bring it up, sir, to 9.5 to 10% of payroll by 1969. You talk about this as insurance. Insurance is a system where money is put into a system and it is there to be paid out when benefits accrue. You know, sir, as well as I do, that according to the Statistical Abstract of the United States in 1960, in 1957, there was a net decrease in the Social Security Fund of $126 million. In 1958, this decrease was $528 million. And last year, sir, when you took all of the money that was paid in by the employers and the employees of America, and you added to that all of the interest of the Social Security Fund, the net decrease, the amount of money paid out in excess of the amount that paid in, was $1,724 million. This, sir, is not insurance. This is a tax. And in recognition of the facts that it is a tax, the Congress of the United States has already put in regular increases, which will go to 9% of payroll in 1969. And if the provisions, as already presented by Senator Kennedy in the last few days, are passed, the present tax that a worker pays of $114 $144 will go to 1969 to $250 for each employer and employee. This is a tax, a gross tax. This is before any deductions for his family or other needs. $250 will be the figure in 1969, together with what is already established by law and with what Senator, with what President Kennedy has requested in
well,
the last
I,
few
I'd
days.
Like to point out
this
again
is
that
not insurance.
That the cost of the Kennedy medical care portion of the Social Security will cost the average wage earner at the rate of who earns $5,000 a year, 5 cents a day. Now, you keep saying that the Social Security system is not an insurance system.
That is correct.
And I'd like to just bring you up to date on your reading, because I think you're slightly behind. Here is a report dated...
My reading came from the United States government original record.
This is also a United States government record dated 1959 and entitled Financing Old Age Survivors and Disability Insurance, a report of the Advisory Council of the Social Security Financing. You know, they say that when you need a doctor...
Cohen of Michigan?
They say that when you need a doctor...
Mr. Cohen of Michigan?
No, this is not.
You mean that wasn't one of his? Thank you.
The old saying is that when you need a doctor, you don't call a plumber. And when you need an actuary or an economist, you don't call a doctor. And this is why you get in trouble. This report is by the Advisory Committee of the Social Security System, who have the responsibility under the system of periodically auditing the funds, measuring the adequacy of the funds with the liability based upon the schedule of benefits and the number of people covered. This is not made up of propagandists, labor leaders who are out trying to carry this fight against the medical society. It's made up of the top people in the insurance field. Included, for example, is Reinhard A. Hohaus, Vice President and Chief Actuary of the Metropolitan Life Insurance Company. Now, I think that he can speak with more authority about whether this is an insurance fund than you can. He's been trained to be able to evaluate, to analyze...
What does he say, Mr. Ruth?
Let me read you what he says. This is the part of your reading that you're behind on. The conclusion of their report. In conclusion, the Council would reiterate that we have said earlier in this report, in a dynamic society, a program of old age, survivor, and disability insurance requires periodic review of its operation to assure that its effectiveness is maintained. The Council is pleased to report that according to the best cost estimates available, the contribution schedule now in the law makes adequate provisions for meeting the cost of the benefits provided. Now, this
Mr.
is completely
Ruther.
Contrary to what you've said.
No,
and
Mr.
it's
Ruther,
the word
wait a minute.
Of the leading actuaries in this country and the men who have been trained not in medicine, but in the science and in the know-how of how you figure the cost and the actuarial basis of an insurance program.
Mr. Ruther, you've been trained in the misuse of figures from long experience. The figures that I quoted, sir... The last figure of last year's deficit of $1,724 million, more dollars paid out of Social Security than came in, is an official report of the Social Security Administration itself. And I'll remind you your own words that you just read, that in a dynamic society, and Senator Humphrey admitted on a similar television debate less than 3 weeks ago, that of course Social Security is based on the principle of continued high-level employment. Because only if we have people working and paying into the system do we have enough money to pay these benefits. And I'll remind you that at the present time, our unemployment rate is very high, and you know it as well as I do. And you know that when employment is high, Less people are paying into the fund. At the present time, someplace between 4.5 and 5 million unemployed workers, which means their employers are not contributing to the fund. And every month, as a result of the high quality of medical care in this country, we're adding 30,000 people on the other end who will receive Social Security for an average of 15 more years. The only way that these people can get their Social Security checks is for us to keep high employment. As long as we have an employment that is off, less money is going into the fund, and every month more money is going out.
May I ask this question? Do you consider Blue Cross to be a medical insurance program?
I think Blue Cross has been a very fine, and it's one of the outstanding programs.
Is it an insurance program?
It is a very fine, it is an insurance program.
It is an insurance program.
That is correct.
All right. Now, in Michigan right now, as a matter of fact, the day before yesterday, they held public hearings in the city of Detroit. The state insurance commissioner held a public hearing to discuss the request pending now by the Blue Cross Insurance System of Michigan of a rate adjustment of 22%. Now, is Blue Cross actuarially funded? Is it worked out so that everybody who has an equity is protected actuarially by a fund? The answer is no.
Mr. Ruther,
every time Blue Cross gets in difficulty, they come back and ask for more money. Now, you want to apply different standards to the Social Security Insurance Fund because you want to keep saying it's not an insurance fund, it's a welfare fund.
On the contrary,
it's just as much an insurance fund as the Blue Cross.
Well, that isn't true.
But the difference is that in 1940 you thought that was socialism, you changed your mind. I hope you'll change your mind early enough to join forces so we can get a good medical care program through the Congress.
Dr. Annis, is it not true that one of the concerns of doctors is that the fee-for-service principle will be damaged or destroyed by such a medical plan as this?
No, this is a minor problem. It isn't a question of fee-for-service, in that we have no objections to many of these of the private insurance programs where the doctor is reimbursed for his service from other sources. It is a question of having the federal government being responsible for a whole segment of our population, providing the care, setting the standards, paying the bills, putting out the rules and regulations under which it will be paid. Now, a little bit earlier, you asked Mr. Ruther a question that I'd like to answer. You asked him why the doctors say that it's socialized medicine. I'd like to ask you and ask Mr. Ruther, if anybody knows what socialized medicine is, certainly the American Socialist Party ought to know. In the newspaper New America, of which a copy I picked up when I was in New York a couple of weeks ago, they put out that the Ferran Bill sparks renewed fight for socialized medicine. They point out that once the Ferran Bill is passed, this nation will be provided with a mechanism for socialized medicine capable of indefinite expansion in every direction. They go out and point out that as the government wades cautiously into medical costs through such partial programs as the Ferran approach, you can work to make these programs more comprehensive and to involve the government ever deeper in the question of medical care. And they point out the fight for socialized medicine is as old as this century, but the prospects for victory have never been brighter. It's up to you. And I merely ask you, sir, if you think that we're wrong in calling it socialized medicine, who knows better what socialized medicine is than the socialists themselves? And they are putting out the rallying cry to the people of America to join your COPE organization. This is one of the recommendations that you do.
This is a self-serving statement of theirs. Anything that they can bring under their tent, they think they can take credit for it. But I think that it's kind of nonsensical, Dr. Annis, to say that this is Social Security. Here's the Business Week. This is a very reputable, conservative business magazine. On October the 16th, 1960, they had this to say about what you call socialism. It says, the problem basically is that the aged are high-cost, high-risk, low-income customers. Their health needs can be met only by themselves when they are young or by other younger people who are still working. The only way to handle their health problems, therefore, is to spread the risk and the cost widely, and that can best be done through the Social Security system. Now, I don't think they're advocating socialism. I don't think President Kennedy is, or Governor Rockefeller, or Mr. Folsom, who was the Social Security the Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare under the Eisenhower administration, one of the top executives of the Eastman Kodak Company, Life Magazine, New York Times. I don't think these people are advocating socialism. You people are confused. Socialism means that all the doctors go on the government payroll, that all the hospitals are taken over by the government and operated by the government, that the government controls the facilities and the personnel. Under the Social Security approach that we're proposing, What one doctor goes on the payroll of the government? Not one hospital is taken over by the government.
Mr. Ruther,
all we're talking about is how can the person covered by Social Security pay for the medical care? He comes to you. If you think he should be hospitalized, you put him in the hospital in which you have hospital bed privileges.
Mr. Ruther,
how long he stays there is your decision. That this plan only helps pay for it.
Mr. Ruther, we shouldn't confuse
that paying mechanism, the economic mechanism, with the question of socialism.
There is no confusion, sir. Every bill which has been introduced into the Congress has stated that services shall be rendered in those institutions under contract with the federal government, under rules and regulations prescribed by the federal government, under compensation as prescribed by the federal government. And to the extent that we participate in any program where the government helps take care of people who cannot help to help themselves, we are following a good humanitarian principle. We are being good Americans. But to the extent that we are taxing the workers of this country to provide medical care for a whole segment of our people, whether they can afford it or not, whether they need it or not, whether they want it or not, whether they ask for it or not, when the taxpayers who are in the working age groups are going to be taxed to provide medical care for people who can well afford to pay for themselves, this, sir, is socialism. Whenever the government provides for the people, whether they need it or not, and it calls the terms under which this provision is made, this is socialism. I admit to you, sir, that this is socialism for a small segment of our population. But if we are providing such monies available to the hospitals for 20% of their population, and as the older population increases, and we as doctors are going to see to it that it continues to increase at a rapid rate, as it increases, 20 and then 30% of a hospital's total income will be under circumstances dictated to by a federal government.
Well,
we know what it is, sir, that we know what it is as physicians. You said a little while ago, if you need a plumber, get a plumber. If you need a doctor, get a doctor. We know what it is as physicians to have a contract with the federal government. We had a contract under Medicare. The contract was something, and you know more about contracts than I do. It's supposed to be bilateral, and changes should be after the full discussion on both sides.
The doctors had a contract
with the federal government under Medicare, and at the end of the termination or beginning near the end of the year, by unilateral decision, the United States government changed the terms of that contract without discussing it with anybody. This, sir, is an evidence of one of the things that we've had in dealing with the bureaucracies which inevitably go with government.
Well,
to the extent that people are in need, we're for helping them. To the extent they can help themselves. This is the principle upon which America was based.
Let me ask this, Dr. Anderson, people take care of themselves. You are obviously in favor of free choice.
That is correct,
sir.
So
am I. Do you contend that under the Kerr-Mills bill, where a person is really getting medical care under an expanded public assistance, public welfare program, that the individual has free choice?
Yes, I happen
to know that's not true.
Mr. Ruther,
I happen to know what happens in Detroit. When the private doctor can't take care of the person because he has no money, many times they get taken care of because of an old relationship. But many times they get referred to the receiving hospital or some other hospital, and they do not have freedom of choice. And I should like also to ask you, do you contend, as does the official literature of the American Medical Association, that under the Social Security bill proposed by President Kennedy to the Congress of the United States today, that a person under that program of Social Security would not have free choice of doctors, and that under that choice the government is going to put the doctors and the hospitals under federal control?
Under the bill which was presented today, we don't know yet what it's going to do.
Well, you're opposing something you don't know about.
Oh, on the contrary. I am opposing the basic principle of taxing people for Social Security, putting a Social Security tax on the workers and the employers of America.
You're opposed to the principle of Social Security.
I am opposed to the principle of Social Security tax to raise money to provide benefits. The principle of Social Security, sir, is to make money available to our people to spend it as they need and choose to do. If you are proposing a system to increase the benefits to elderly people because they need more money to spend for food and clothes and shelter and or medical care, that's one thing. You are not proposing that.
Oh, yes, you are not.
On the contrary, you are proposing a tax whereby the government will provide a service. It will buy this service and provide it to the people. It is not giving them money, which is the Social Security principle, to buy and to spend on the things that they want and need.
Dr. Ennis, you're slightly inaccurate. You say I'm not proposing it. I testified this afternoon for 3 hours before the Joint Economic Committee of the Congress with 6 people from both houses there. And I talked about the unemployment and the economic situation, and I talked about the need for overcoming our tragic deficit on the educational front so that every American child could have an opportunity to grow to his maximum. And I talked about the need of extending the Social Security coverage to people not covered and to increase those, the funds, the benefits, to buy more groceries and all the other necessities like. And I also talked about the medical care. We're not neglecting the one front just to talk about the other. We think we need to do both.
Mr. Ruther, the difference is that when you're talking in terms of increasing the benefits of Social Security, you are still talking about the basic supplying dollars to our elderly people that are being robbed by inflation so that their dollars buy less. But when you talk of medical care, you're not talking of giving them money to buy insurance or to provide for their medical care. No. You're saying we are going to provide your medical care for you, and the government is going to pay the bill.
Now, what we're saying is that when you need to go into a hospital, that instead of being subjected to the indignities and the humiliation of public charity, that you will get this as a matter of right because you, with millions of your fellow citizens, joined together through the instruments of a democratic government and participated in a Social Security insurance program, and you amortize the heavy cost of that medical care in your aged years during the period of your productive employment.
You are talking about.
And what we're saying is that when you need that hospital bed, that the cost of that will be covered out of this insurance fund.
Mr. Ruther, can I ask you one earthy question? What is your answer to the objection that people will be, by this plan, encouraged to become hypochondriacs and will imagine ailments and overburden the service with imagined complaints?
Well, this is precisely the argument that the Medical Society used back in 1940 when we were fighting for Blue Cross. Exactly. They said that if you have Blue Cross, so the General Motors worker or a U.S. Steel worker or a worker somewhere else has access to hospital care out of the insurance fund and doesn't have to pay it out of pocket, then everybody is going to flood the hospitals. But this is within the control of the medical profession. You can get a hotel room at the Statler Hilton by phoning or sending a telegram. But you can't get a hospital bed that way. You can only get a hospital bed through an accredited physician who has bed privileges in a hospital. And if that bed should not be filled by that person, that's a medical decision within the complete control of the doctor. And how the bill is paid does not dictate medical judgment. I will fight to the last to have anyone else but doctors make medical decisions. But the problem here is the doctors are not satisfied to make the medical decisions in the area of their competence. They want to make the medical decisions and the economic decisions. They want to tell you what you need to take care of your medical needs, and then they want to turn around and say, now, but you can only pay it this way. But if people want to pay it a different way, they say, no, that's socialism, it's bad, and we will not cooperate.
Mr. Ruther, but you just got through carrying out what we're talking about. You talked about that these are financial needs. The principle of Social Security is to provide for a person's financial needs, and we provide money. But you said that we're the ones that say we're going to provide it in a certain way. There's only one way to do it. You're telling them that there's only one way to provide medical care. The government shall provide it. You're not telling them that we shall give you more money to provide for medical care like you provide for food and clothing and shelter with the spending of dollars. You are saying you can spend this money in any way you please except for hospital care. We're going to provide that to you. And it is not a decision of the individual. It is not a decision of the doctor.
But aren't we taking the principle of Blue Cross? Now in Blue Cross, a worker who's covered by Blue Cross, if he becomes ill, he doesn't get money from Blue Cross. He gets coverage. He gets certain medical benefits, both medical and hospital. He doesn't get money. Now, if that's sound in Blue Cross and you go along with that now, although you opposed it earlier, why can't you apply that same principle to Social Security? Instead of getting money for medical care, you get coverage.
The difference, sir, is that in Blue Cross, a certain amount is paid per month or per quarter or per year in an insurance fund. It is true that it is a non-profit system, and a goodly portion of it goes back to the individuals who pay in. This is set up on an actuarial basis, and this is true, that from year to year, as increased coverage is available and as more coverage is demanded, the amount and cost of Blue Cross is increased because it is this type of a system. But what you're talking about is something that's going to cost many, many times less, but you're going to provide them with many, many times more. And now, may I say too, sir, that in the bill which is proposed today by President Kennedy, it indicates what Mr. Smith referred to, that if this is an unlimited thing, that people may move into the hospital and have prolonged hospitalization. And in the bill which was presented today, if I can judge from the Washington newspapers, not having seen a bill yet, I understand it is not yet available, in this bill, this will be $90 deductible, and the patient will pay the first $10 for the first 9 days. Is this not correct? This is a recognition that if it's all made available without some responsibility on the part of the patient, it may cause an increased demand for hospitalization and medical care.
Yeah, but the question of the control of the hospital bed utilization is completely and exclusively within the hands of the medical profession. They determine when you need to be hospitalized. They make the arrangements for the entry into the hospital, and for the medical profession to suggest that they're going to lose control of this is not in keeping with the facts.
But this, sir, now, is the basic principle of the Kerr-Mills principle. The doctor determines medical
needs. You just said a minute ago that the Blue Cross was an insurance program and that it was actuarially funded. That is not true. Because if the Blue Cross in Michigan were actuarially funded, it would not be now asking for a 22% rate hike.
Mr. Ruther, may I also remind you that
it is based upon estimated and projected costs.
Mr.
Ruther, 2-year period.
In your criticism of Blue Cross in the state of Michigan, may I also remind you that you can criticize many other segments of that same state of Michigan. They have established welfare programs so you couldn't pay your teachers last year. And if it hadn't have been that you borrowed money in advance payments of taxes from some of your industrialists, and I'm told this went up into many millions of dollars, if it wasn't true that you liquidated a fund which had been set aside to take care of veterans' pensions, if you hadn't have done these things, you couldn't have paid your teachers. So that when you criticize Blue Cross for having to be refunded, may I remind you, sir, that the state of Michigan has also had to increase its sales tax 1 cent in order to pay some of its debts and again get back on a reasonable
financial basis. You see, I'm not criticizing Blue Cross. I'm merely pointing out that what you say about Blue Cross is not true. That Blue Cross,
what you're saying is Blue Cross in Michigan had difficulties.
Blue Cross, yes, but this is true all over the United States. Blue Cross plans are in serious financial difficulties all over the country.
May I ask you why, sir?
Well, you know why.
I'm asking you.
For many reasons, because the cost of medical care keeps going up for many reasons.
In other words, it has to go up in cost.
Well, it's like most everything else. It keeps going up.
What about this Social Security tax? Is it going to stay, as you say, a quarter of 1%, 5 cents a day, or is it going up also?
Well, you see, there are no economic Santa Clauses in the world. You have to pay for everything you get.
I agree with you, sir,
that the American people are prepared to pay the cost of the security and the dignity that they think that the expansion of the Social Security program will give them.
I'm afraid on that thought I'll have to interrupt you. Now we have time for a summary by each. Can we have the first summary or rebuttal or anything you wish to say for 2 minutes, Mr. Ruther?
Well, I would just like to say this in conclusion. I think that basically the area of disagreement is that the American Medical Association has not accepted the tried and true principle of social insurance, which has been worked out now for 25 years in the Social Security system. And we believe that if you can, during your working years, participate in the voluntary plan like Blue Cross in order to meet your hospital medical care needs, that there ought to be a way to meet the heavy cost in your last years of your life, where your income goes down but your medical needs go up, by expanding the Social Security program so that you can pay for that during your productive years and get this benefit, the hospital and medical protection you need in your aging years, not as a matter of charity, but as a matter of right, so that you can get it with your head up with a measure of human dignity.
Dr. Annis, your closing statement?
and tell Mr. Ruther that we are not opposed to what he, quote, says is a tried and proven method of social or social insurance, the Social Security system. I say to you, sir, that the Social Security system is designed to provide dollars, to provide purchasing power in our older people at a time of lessened income. But the proposal to tie medical care for the aged to Social Security carries with it a provision for medical care, not increased dollars. This is a strict departure from the Social Security principle, and as Senator Byrd has pointed out, might very easily bankrupt the Social Security system. Our prime concern is to see that medical care, the new, modern, up-to-date, excellent medical care that has prolonged the life of the American people, is made available to all of our citizens, irrespective of their age. We feel, however, that in this group of those presently over 16, of their 16 million, some 4 or 5 million are in need. The balance can take care of themselves either out of their own funds or out of the insurance which they now carry, some 8 million policies. To the extent that people are in need, we think they should be helped. That is the reason that we have agreed to support and are strongly trying to implement at the present time in 46 of the 50 states the Kerr-Mills bill. This is a principle which will help people who are in need. It will not put a tax on the workers of America to pay for everyone over 65, whether they need it or not. This we think is sound. This we think is right. This we think is just. This we are for.
Well, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. Thank you very much, Dr. Annis. Thank you very much, Mr. Ruther. You've generated a great deal of heat along with light, but I belong to the school of thought that believes that light should be accompanied with heat.
That is the end of the Ruther-Annis debate on Face the Nation. That which follows marks the advent of a new program feature to be called Letters to CBS Reports. Other journalistic media such as newspapers and magazines use this technique and this system, and we intend to try to use it from time to time to air viewers' opinions on some of our programs. On February the 2nd, CBS Reports presented The Business of Health, a one-hour program on health insurance and some of the problems of financing medical care. The program caused a great controversy inside and outside the medical profession. Many of the letters were critical of us, and many were favorable to us. Here are some excerpts from some characteristic letters that we received. An official letter from Dr. Julian P. Price, chairman of the Board of Trustees of the American Medical Association, addressed to CBS, stated, "The medical profession was profoundly shocked at the caricature of medicine and its aims on CBS Reports. The Board of Trustees of the American Medical Association strongly protests the misrepresentation, bias, and distortions which compose the show from beginning to end. It is the considered judgment of physicians in all corners of America that this CBS report was designed to project the worst possible image of those who see in socialized medicine not just a threat to the quality of medicine, but the loss of individual freedom as well." A telegram from the Des Moines County Medical Society. "If doctors diagnosed and treated patients with such incomplete, biased coverage, God help America. Phi CBS." From Dr. Benjamin P. Potter of New Jersey, also a member of the AMA. "I was proud of Dr. Duffy. Dr. Duffy was a participant in the program who was critical of the AMA. I was proud of Dr. Duffy for his representation to the public of the side of medicine so eloquently concealed by the old and political colleagues who represent the AMA. It is unfortunate that these men and those they represent have been living in the past and have no social sense as demonstrated by the AMA lobby in Washington, which has opposed every effort to meet the humane needs of the people. And to think that we, as members of the AMA, are footing the bill. When the AMA speaks of government control and individual initiative, it sounds amusing in the light of the arbitrary control that it has of our profession." A telegram from Donald Martin of Wheaton, Illinois. "How slanted can your unbiased reports get? If you want a big Hooper rating, there are more unionists than doctors. There are also more communist socialists than Americans. I know it's more popular to be for free government handouts, but at the expense of integrity, can't you see the writing on the wall?" From a physician in Cleveland, Ohio, who asks that his name be withheld. I have enclosed a letter I recently received from my county medical society instructing me, like a good soldier, to send CBS criticism on your attempt to enlighten the American public. I would like you to know that there are many physicians, such as myself, who heartily endorse such attempts as yours to present the problem of medical care without first asking how the AMA feels about it. The physicians of this country risk every kind of blackballing and eradication of their careers if they show in the slightest any tendency to run counter to the AMA. That's why I choose to remain anonymous. From Dr. Harry G. McGavran, a urologist of Quincy, Illinois. Mr. Smith, pardon me, sir, but you lie. I will be very happy to offer you $1,000 cash for every major operation for which I have charged within $200 of what you said is an average fee for a surgical procedure. I know of no one in the Midwest that charges an average fee of $550, as you said. In answer to that letter and to many others like it, I wrote this letter. In regard to the costs we mentioned in the program for medical care, we were not setting an average or a median. We were, as we clearly said, illustrating what can happen to anyone stricken with a serious illness. And in fact, we received many letters from people saying that the medical costs we stated were too low. From Dr. William A. Sawyer of Rochester, New York. As a member of the AMA for over 40 years, I want to congratulate you and CBS for the program last Thursday evening reporting on medical practice. It was outstanding and, as I know all too well, a true portrayal of the real situation. As chairman for almost 10 years of the AMA Committee on Health of Industrial Workers, I am familiar with the United Mine Workers Welfare and Retirement Fund program and the difficulties they have had with organized medical profession generally. If all the facts concerning these difficulties were revealed, the public would be shocked. I want to urge you and CBS not to be greatly concerned about the AMA protests about last Thursday's program. Signed, William A. Sawyer, M.D., Rochester, New York. A telegram from Dr. William B. Hildebrand of the State Medical Society of Wisconsin. Program did not emphasize more money spent on alcohol and tobacco than on medical care. Did not discuss broad acceptance, satisfaction with voluntary health insurance. Theme of program slanted towards Social Security medicine, closed panel systems, loss of freedom. Medical care has become a symbol designed by socialistic planners as first great institution to be put under government control and operation. Could television be next? That's a cross-section of some of the mail we received on the business of health. We welcome all letters on all programs and will from time to time attempt to share some of them with our television audience. This is Howard K. Smith. Good night.